Market moving insight and analysis. Join Jim Cramer, David Faber, and me, Carl Quintanilla, on the opening bell hour of CNBC Squawk on the Street. Good Monday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer, David Faber at the New York Stock Exchange. There's one chart to watch this morning, and that is oil up 10% on the attack of Saudi facilities and the worst single supply disruption ever. What's the impact on the global economy, China, Aramco, and more? Futures are weak, but Chevron and Exxon will actually add about 50 points to the Dow at the open. Coming up later on this morning, Energy Secretary Rick Perry calling the attack a deliberate attack on the global economy and the global energy market.
Plus, OxyContin maker Purdue Pharma is filing for bankruptcy protection. That occurred early this morning. The company's chairman, Steve Miller, joining us to discuss the settlement and what he hopes is for a path forward for this company.
First up, though, a series of attacks on the world's two largest oil processing facilities in Saudi Arabia has energy prices soaring today. Yemen's Houthi rebels have claimed responsibility, but the U.S. is rejecting that notion, saying the scope and the precision of the attack suggests the launch was not made by the Houthis, but in fact originated from Iran. However, Iran calling those claims baseless and unacceptable. Guys, we've been talking all year long about what it would take to create a true supply shock.
Yes.
Do we really have one? How long could this last?
I think that a third is going to come back this week. It's 5.7 million barrels. But look, there's a temporary inability to get as much oil, Permian oil. You can only ship so much Permian oil. Because you have a Houston harbor that can handle it, two other harbors that can handle only these very large crude containers, Corpus Christi, not yet. I guess what I'm saying is it, no, it can't because we're pumping too much. And it does remind you that if we had even more pipelines, we could just turn the spigot on. It's not the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, just it's the Permian.
No, and but there are still a lot of questions right now, the key one of which is there going to be some sort of response either from the Saudis with the president's tweets from us in some way? Are we drawing Iran in because we believe that they were responsible, and therefore what would that mean
for the price
of oil if, in
drones.
Fact, there was a back and forth?
We're saying cruise missile. That's obviously not...
Saying it's a cruise missile that was sent in addition to the drones,
right,
which means that it was unlikely to have been simply the Houthi rebels.
Right. I don't know. I mean, look, I think it's wide open because it seems like we're itching to do something against Iran. And then, last week I thought we were doing, when Bolton was fired,
the price of oil went down because the likelihood of potential hostilities with Iran was seen as going down as well, given how hawkish he is. But this is a crisis.
Oh, I'm not saying it's a crisis. I mean, it's a crisis. I'm just saying that in terms of the price of oil and what's happening, it's not the way it would have been, say, 40 years ago, where it would have been up 20 hours.
Although, are you creating a difference between Texas and Brent? Because some of the projections now on Brent... $5 to $30 from JP Morgan.
$75
out of Goldman.
I mean, look, if they turned on Canada, I mean, Canada doesn't even bother anymore because their stuff is too expensive. So, I mean, if oil got up to a certain price, it would be good. So I just don't think, I think that David's right, that the one you got to focus on is Iran. I actually feel like the defense stocks are the big winners here, because if you know that the 10 drones can take something out, you're going to have radar everywhere. I mean, we're going to have radar.
Well, Reuters has a headline right now that the U.S. and the Saudis are going to talk about sharing even more intelligence.
Yeah, well, I mean, you need Raytheon. You need L3 Harris. Those are the two best. I mean, don't want to try to cat too much on the arms mergers, but you need this. I mean, think about this. Let's say you have a solar-powered drone. Everybody's in trouble.
It's a scary... thought.
Right?
Yeah, it is. And it's likely, I would assume, technology only continues to advance.
But I'm not saying it's a dirty suitcase bomb. But,
robot armies eventually. But back to sort of the current crisis here. I mean, 5.7 million barrels taken out, more than half of their production. They're saying that some of it may come back fairly soon.
But this
processing part of it got hurt badly. That's going to be weak. And we really don't still have a lot of details, do we?
No, we don't. We don't know whether, I mean, there's some notes today saying the oil service companies are going to do well. And then there's some that say they're going to do badly. I think we don't really have a read on what was destroyed. But remember, the Saudis are an odd beneficiary if they can get that stuff out, because they need prices up.
They need prices up. Now, they're still planning on taking Aramco public, although, again, that figures into that prominently, this idea, of course, of taking what would be the largest single company in the world public, because investors may sort of want a lot more assurances in their ability to actually defend their production.
Who wants that? I mean, that's... I'm not saying they have the same corporate governance as we, but this is another deal that the market doesn't want, but you can't stop.
But because the risk factors are so significant.
Risk factor also, until today, these stocks have just been the worst. I mean, it is interesting that Wednesday and Thursday, you really started talking about the endless bear market. So there are some shorts in oil. So you want to sell into the shorts who have to cover. The ETFs have to cover, and the algos that are nuts now, because they were all about how if oil went up, it had to be because of demand.
No, right. They're having a lot of people having an interesting morning.
Really interesting.
Speaking of the Saudis, Hadley Gamble is in Riyadh for us today with a look at what the attack means for Aramco, as well as the geopolitical implications for us here at home. Hey, Hadley.
Hey, good morning, Carl. Good morning, guys. I have to tell you that when it comes to the rumor mill that's taking place in this country over the last 48 hours since these attacks took place, 5.7 million barrels taken out of Saudi production, a lot of rumors, a lot of concern, obviously, from the Saudi government. But interestingly enough, no comment directly from the Saudi Foreign Ministry, which has hitherto been extremely hawkish when it comes to policies, Tehran versus Washington, Tehran versus Riyadh. And Aramco really only coming out with that initial statement, although we were told yet again yesterday that we would hear more from Aramco on their internal investigation today. But I want to get you a walkthrough of some of the reports that we've been seeing over the last few hours. One report from Reuters suggesting that the damage and frankly, the damage was much more significant than they originally thought, that output actually could take weeks to restore. That was according to some senior officials quoted out of Reuters. And then a Wall Street Journal report talking about the very thing you guys just mentioned, which was the Aramco IPO and the possibility of yet again delaying that mother of all IPOs. That is very significant in terms of the timing. Because just a week ago, you'll remember, the Saudi energy minister, Khalid Al-Falah, got the boot from Saudi Arabia's crown prince. And many folks were speculating that that was really because he just wasn't ever truly behind the Aramco IPO. And the two folks that were put in place as energy minister, a member of the royal family, and as chairman of Aramco, the gentleman who's in charge of the public investment fund, Yasser Al-Rumayyan, seeming to want to get that IPO much more fast-tracked on its way to fruition. So that's interesting in terms of the timing. Now, in terms of what's been happening in the geopolitical sphere, that's a bigger question. And frankly, the tight-lipped nature of Saudi officials over the last 48 hours really does seem to speak to the fact that they have significant worries over what a potential escalation of this issue could be and whether or not the United States would really have their back. President Trump, Mike Pompeo, very quickly singling out Iran, essentially in tweets over the weekend, and even just a few hours ago, the president saying that they were locked and loaded. You've got to understand, when we talk about military hardware in the Persian Gulf, the United States is by far the most present in the Persian Gulf. I spent time on the USS Abraham Lincoln just a couple of months ago. It was very apparent to me that this is something that if the United States wants to find out what's happening in this part of the world, they know it a heck of a lot better. And that does seem to follow to the conversations that you guys were mentioning in terms of the more intelligence sharing between Saudi Arabia and the United States. But certainly, the fact that we haven't heard yet anything from the Saudi foreign minister about what exactly took place is significant, I think, because it just seems to me that they don't want to make a commitment where they don't know if the United States will have their back to follow up. Guys.
Hadley, thank you for that. Hadley Gamble in Riyadh will be coming back to you all morning, obviously. One last coda on this, Jim. Some discussion about the trade war with China and whether this gives them an incentive to deal, because China and Japan are maybe the most hurt.
I did a piece this morning about real money, where I said, okay, look, people don't recognize that we have bountiful natural resources. We've really come into some with technology. They don't. The Chinese are short resource. That's one of the reasons why when you always look at the Baltic freight, you see how much they have to import. And this is another one, of course, all we ever hear about is they're playing the long game. You cut off oil, they're not playing the long game. Do you know that a huge percentage of the oil that we ship goes to China? There's no trade deal. They just need it. It's interesting. There's no real tariff there because the way oil trades, obviously.
Right. It's a global commodity. It doesn't know where it's coming from. So,
right.
It goes from here to there, wherever.
Yeah. But there is, you don't hear them saying, hey, listen, we're putting a tariff on oil, because they need our oil. They need our own more than our soy.
Yeah, soy.
The soy.
I'm aware of soy. They make a lot of it. They grow a lot of it in Brazil, though. A lot.
I know. That turned out to be a big win. Who knew? Brazil's doing great.
But that comes on top of the data we got overnight. Industrial production, 17-year low. Fixed asset investment, retail sales, all miss.
Why don't they just put out better numbers, even if they're
well,
not
it sounds
good
now.
Numbers.
I mean, the premier said 6% is going to be very difficult to hold. Maybe they're starting to bend on
that. But why don't he just say that we did 6%? I mean, it's a totalitarian society. Why do they put out real numbers? I mean, remember people you accused previously, they would accuse Obama of putting out fake numbers? I mean, we're a democracy. Why are these guys, why don't they put out numbers that are What is this?
That was for you, not for the viewers.
David, we have a podcast. When you do this, the podcast is thinking, is he doing thumbs up? Is he doing thumbs down?
I was just being, a fun Monday morning thing.
Without Shannon
really.
Siemens, our producer, you would have no idea on the podcast what we're doing. Mm-hmm. Are you like this with
data is extremely important, and the accuracy of that data, I would argue, is also important for everybody. So it's, I think it's great that we continue to have certain streams of data in this country. We rely on them a lot, and maybe the Chinese feel similarly.
I think the Chinese should put out better data, not do better data. I mean, geez, if they actually start talking about inflation after this, I'll really start thinking that they're the democracy, which they're not.
No, nobody's claiming they are.
They must have a powerful commerce department.
Nobody is claiming they are.
Like, I guess Mao. I mean, like, I don't think Mao ever. I mean, I think one of Mao's 5-year plans said that they passed us. Now they're like real. Yeah. Jeez, they're real and they're terrible. To put a spin on a Seinfeld thing.
Turning to domestic stories this morning, obviously.
That was good.
There's another big story out this morning. Tens of thousands of workers at GM have gone on strike in their first nationwide walkout against the automaker since 07. GM and the UAW have failed to reach an agreement on a new contract. UAW says it's seeking what it calls fair wages, affordable health care, our share of profits and job security. GM says we have negotiated in good faith and a sense of urgency. We'll stay on top of those developments throughout the morning. Pretty far apart in the boat. Thinks this could go a couple weeks.
Remember the old days, what would happen? Just about temporary workers. They would say, look, we're going to take temp, which is 7%. We're going to take temporary workers to 15% if you don't stop because we're going to Monterey. Remember those days? They said, listen, we're just going right to Mexico. You can't do that because of the president. So the president and the unions are, who would have thought it, right? Elizabeth Warren, pro-union, the president doing things that are pro-union. See, once again, remember last week you were talking about the parallels between Senator Warren and President Trump?
I may have referenced one parallel, certainly on trade. Yeah,
but this is really interesting because what can GM do? What leverage does GM have? Okay, so they have a little inventory. Maybe they have 3-month inventory. They lost their Mexican leverage. They can't go to Mexico. Plus, we don't even know if there's a deal yet. We got to find out if there's a deal.
You mean the North American
trade? Yeah, are the Democrats going to bring
you? Might, yeah.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to talk to Nancy Pelosi about that.
I understand you are.
Tomorrow.
Excellent.
Speaker. I'm going to go to the speaker because I think that's really important.
I hear the speaker's coming to you.
The speaker's coming. Yeah, she is.
Yeah, it's
tomorrow.
Yeah, it's going to be news.
I think, the speaker's going to talk. We're talking about an interview that I'm doing.
But it's not as though there's any hope for legislation out of Congress in any way, shape, or form.
Well, let's find out. Why don't we ask Speaker Pelosi before you just decide.
I've decided.
That, you know, doing one of those things for the podcast. This is David moving his hand sideways.
Sort of like,
and then, but David, can you see on the podcast when you do this?
Cross my arms? I'm not crossing my arms.
All right. Well, I just think we ought to have a
fully
little
attentive.
More.
I'm paying complete attention to you
Thank
now.
Thank you. So, yes, Speaker Pelosi will be on Mad Bunny tomorrow. Love to hear some questions.
That's good. That's going to be a newsmaker interview. Yeah. She sets the rules on this one, at least for now. When we come back, the opioid crisis. OxyContin maker Purdue Pharma filing for bankruptcy protection as it faces a wave of lawsuits. David's got an exclusive with the company's chairman, Steve Miller, and that's straight ahead. Don't forget, it's a big Fed week decision on Wednesday. We'll talk about that and keep our eye on oil today. Squawk on the Street from the NYSE continues in a moment.
Welcome back. Purdue Pharma announcing this morning what they're calling an agreement in principle on a landmark opioid litigation settlement. Of course, Purdue, the maker of OxyContin, number one on the hit list when you think about the potential those responsible for or being held responsible for the horrible opioid crisis that has engulfed this country over the last decade. Some 400,000 or more deaths at this point. overnight, the company getting the settlement with 24 separate state AGs. Now, remember, there already has been a settlement with two other states, but there are 24 states that have not yet signed on. And this morning, the company's chairman, Steve Miller, who's been there a little over a year or so, sat down with me in an interview to explain why this is an important moment and why he's hopeful that he can convince any number of other state AGs to eventually join said settlement. Take a listen.
This is a fork in the road. There's two choices here. One is to implement this settlement, which means we have to get more states beyond the 24 that we already have. And we'll be working on that starting today. But the other choice is instead to revert to the litigation. And we could expend all of the resources of the company battling all these lawsuits. We think the best answer is put the company on the table, have a settlement so that all of the value can, as soon as possible, go to the unfortunate victims of the opioid crisis.
Right. Now, a key part of the resistance of some of the state attorneys general, at least judging from this morning, even since you announced the bankruptcy and the settlement, is the Sacklers' contribution overall. Yeah. How much are the Sacklers contributing to this settlement?
The Sacklers are contributing, first off, the entire value of this company, which we think is the company is worth $3.5 billion, and the plan to
$3.5 billion.
$3.5 billion, and the plan to provide free or at cost rescue drugs amounts to about $4 billion, conservatively estimated.
That's over a period of obviously many years.
So there's $7 or $8 billion just from the Sacklers contribution of the company. On top of that, they're putting up $3 billion from their other investments and resources, guaranteed. And on top of that, the lion's share of the proceeds from selling off their overseas pharmaceutical businesses. There are some people who will never be satisfied. But the only way to test that would be to revert to litigation and expend all of the resources that are available on litigation instead of on helping communities that have suffered.
So the idea, again, is the bankrupt Purdue will get a judge to agree to this plan. The hope, of course, is beginning today, and you heard Mr. Miller discussing it, that other states will join along, that it will be approved by a bankruptcy judge, that then eventually Purdue will emerge from bankruptcy, but exist basically run by these trustees who will it will run as a not-for-profit company that is going to fund the various treatments and whatnot for and continue to make OxyContin, by the way, for, you know, they've stopped marketing. They don't have a sales force, but and that's the plan. We'll see. This morning, judging from all the statements, and we had a lot longer interview, which, by the way, you can see on CNBC.com, the entirety of the interview. But the statements from the state AGs are the Sacklers aren't paying enough.
Really?
And it's simple as that, and they want them to pay more. You saw the story over the weekend, about $1 billion worth of wire transfers. The New York State AG says they've identified in terms of the Sacklers taking money out of the country. So it's early days here, but Purdue obviously is filing for bankruptcy and hoping this settlement is going to stick.
What's Mr. Miller's, who's one of the great turnaround agents of our time, what is his relationship with the Sacklers?
You know, I asked that, Jim, and it was unclear to me. You know, he obviously works for the company or took over the company that is a Sackler company, but the board is now completely separate. The management, to the extent it is as well, is separate. But he had to negotiate with them about their contribution beyond, obviously, the company itself, but the cash contribution coming from the Sackler family.
Aren't litigation costs at this point difficult, painful? I mean, what leverage do they have to fight this in court?
His point is, if we keep fighting, we're going to use all the money up that we want to put in, essentially, to help the states most affected by the opioid crisis in terms of both treatment, in terms of, you heard him talking about those drugs that can be helpful. And so that's the main point. It's like, why spend it all on litigation? We're going to have as much as we ever have right now.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I just think, why are they still making this stuff?
You don't believe so?
No.
Even certain terribly painful diseases.
I think so. I wish
diseases.
It would be cannabis. But there's J&J getting sued, and they would tell you the same thing. And they're on the hook for doing something that they think is good. Obviously, the lawyers don't think so. The plaintiff part.
Incredible story. Something to watch today. We'll get Cramer's Mad Dash in a moment. Countdown to the opening bell as we watch oil as well. That opening bell coming in about 7 minutes. Also ahead, our Energy Secretary Rick Perry will get his reaction to the Saudi oil attacks. Don't go anywhere. Take a look at futures. Obviously weak. They're going to get some help, though, from oil and gas-related names, the ETFs of which are set for their best day of the year. We'll see what happens when the opening bell rings in 4.5 minutes.
Welcome back. We're counting down the opening bell. We got about a minute and a half before we get there. Let's squeeze in a Mad Dash ahead of that. Where are you headed?
You'll see a stock up 80% today. It's a takeover bid. Alder Bio, ALDR is the symbol, bought by Lundbeck, which is a Danish company. These guys have a very novel way to attack migraine. It's an infusible one. It's not. You have to have a drip, which some people think is not as good as this, the quick injections from Aimovig and the other ones. But what I like about it is, I think someone else should come in and bid for this. I think that this is a very fast-acting way versus the placebo. It did very well in the tests.
There's a lot of progress being made against migraines, which can be so debilitating.
Well,
I'm
the chief spokesperson for the American Migraine Foundation, and I know that this is a very big deal. I am on Aimovig, which is the one that is from Amgen. There's a Lilly one, there's a Teva one, and now there's Alder. I think that I'm surprised Lundbeck is stealing this, I think. That's how big this is.
Really?
Yeah, this is one that if those others fail, and I know there's a lot of people those others fail, you're going to be put on this. The market's 30 million people in this country. So I'm surprised that Lundbeck is going to get this and not someone else come in and buy it. 80% premium is not enough.
To the opening bell, S&P 500 at the CNBC Real-Time Exchange. That's the big board, Becton Dickinson and Company. And Together for Girls, a partnership dedicated to ending sexual violence against girls. At the NASDAQ, Wilmington Trust, a provider of institutional trust services. So, Jim, you chase some of these marathons and Apaches at the open.
No, I mean, I think that some of these are really constrained by natural gas production. In other words, they have so much natural gas that they don't know where to put it. It's too expensive to pump. Could there be a day two? Only because there's so many shorts. Like someone upgraded Whiting today. And Whiting, there's just such a big short position. Some of these stocks have been down for so long that they are reflecting through where oil was when it was at 26. These things are, some of them cut in half from there. Don't chase. Just don't chase. I think you're going to get hurt.
Yeah, you mentioned Whiting. I think Barclays upped Schlumberger today as well.
My Chattel Trust is selling a big chunk in it. Taking a loss. It was up big last week. And don't forget, you have this Baker Hughes, a GE company slug. Hey, how about if they, boy, talk about being unlucky. They could have sold that today. They could have taken a little more money.
Yeah.
I just don't want cheese. I mean, look, they're not up enough, you could argue, with oil up 5. And we, as David said, we were getting so many conflicting reports about when things will come back online. But how about the fact that it's so easy to take things out?
That's the scary part, is that these tools are so cheap to operate.
Yes.
And the defenses are not there yet.
No.
And who knows if they even will be. These facilities are increasingly vulnerable.
I think that every one of them is vulnerable. They don't really have they don't have radar set up to detect them.
No, but there does seem to be a level of sophistication in the attacks, at least, given that they went after these spheres, these holding tanks, where they have this hydrogen sulfide gas that gets removed from the oil prior to it being transported
so it can
by oil tankers. And those spheres are very complex technologically, apparently, and it's not that easy to just patch them. They may need to be fully remade. It's and dangerous. They're not made dangerous in Saudi Arabia.
Dangerous.
These huge holding tanks that we're talking
about.
And
this stuff is all combustible. I mean, it's what I guess I hate to say, but it's easy to have these destroyed. These are combustible. But I mean, we had a fire in Marcus Hook in Philadelphia, and it's like, wow. Well, it's hard to put out. I mean, I don't know. When are all of them out, the fires?
I have no idea.
We're not getting great information flow out of there.
But at the same time, the rebels, in a statement, warned that more facilities could be targeted
at
any time.
That's the thing. I mean, drones are easy and cheap. And, you know, they can just, remember, if they run on solar, you can send them 5,000 miles.
Right. We don't talk often about the war between Saudi Arabia and Yemen,
yes,
which has been raging for quite some time and has resulted
greatest humanitarian crisis, civilian
deaths.
No journalism over there.
And a huge migrant issue as a result as well.
Look, it's a bad situation, but I think the wrong stocks. You have to buy the stocks. I'll give you an example. My trust has been a loser. Caterpillar. Now, Caterpillar is 5 to 10% China. If you ask what they're really levered to, they're most levered to oil. So I think that that makes sense. Again, I reiterate that you want to own L3 Harris. Fantastic at Radar. Really the clear-cut play. Now, the symbol there is LHX. It's the merger of two companies that we all know, L3 and Harris. It's only up $2. That's crazy. That should be up $10. I'm not kidding. It's a huge beneficiary.
People also pointed to RTM this morning, Raytheon, of course, which is getting acquired by UTX.
But if you notice how well.
Now,
yep.
But another, to your earlier point about defense.
Number one. They're the number one. And so these are companies that we have been really trading off the budget and how much budget money is going to go into defense. I think suddenly people are going to say, wait a second. They now have a whole new set of clients. And they have plenty of production. So I like those very much. I think Raytheon's terrific with that. United Technologies, people not like that.
No, people have not liked that deal, but maybe
Hope
today they
eternal.
Like it a little bit more.
But I like those stock a little longer term. The pipeline stocks, they're good for a couple of days. Don't forget, Master Limited Partnerships have been horrendous. Probably, you know, this is where a lot of wealthy people put their money, and it's been just horrible. So I think some of these groups can have a couple day run just because of ETFs, but then you're going to have to go again. It's just a bad sector.
Yeah. Speaking of names on a run, J.P. Morgan, which got to 120 on Friday, gets cut by Buckingham today down to neutral.
They say
30% premium. By definition, there's less room for improvement.
Yeah.
And we'll see what Powell and company say on Wednesday.
Great company, fairly valued. I mean, it's really amazing that it's fairly valued, like 11 times earnings. I mean, this group is so undervalued historically, but no one wants to own these. They want to own Visa. That's what they want to own. They want to own the next generation. They want fintech.
Yeah.
That's all they care about.
Visa's market cap is only below that of JPM of the big banks, right? At $313 billion. JP Morgan's market cap does exceed that, but
paper
not
to
Bank of America, not Wells Fargo.
No, paper to plastic is still big. And then, of course, paper right to actual digital is PayPal, which started acting well on Friday after a prolonged period of being down. One other just totally wacky one I'm going to give you. The old Dow Chemical was not that levered oil. The new Dow Chemical is oil. Thank you, Frank Mitsch. And that stock was actually down at one point. I mean, they're so levered to oil, the stock's going to be up 3. Down and out.
Dow has been.
Dow. Jim Fitterling doing a great job, but it doesn't matter. And don't forget the millennial portfolio managers. They vote with their sustainable.
You can join all the all the sustainable plastics associations you want. It's not going to help.
You don't like that?
In terms of the forward-facing part of that company. I don't know how you deal
with it. You know, how many continents are there in the world?
Seven? Yeah.
No, right. Eight. There's
eight?
That plastic continent.
Oh, seven. I was going with seven.
That one's big. It's a nice continent. You can't live there yet.
The Great Pacific Garbage Patch
and
is what you're referring to.
Some of that is 30, 40 years old. I think they have old Mr. Clean bottles in there.
They do.
Right. So that's continent.
No, there's at some point in the not-too-distant future, plastic in the ocean will weigh more than fish.
That's scary.
Well, that's what they buy. They'll buy Dow today, and then the millennials will shoot it down. They will.
Maybe they'll buy iPhones, Jim. We did get Ming-Chi Kuo, widely watched a supply chain watcher of Apple, raising iPhone 11 forecast, which Rosenblatt throwed some cold water on.
Yeah,
on
I know. I mean, if you watch football last night on NBC, which I thought was a great game, you saw the camera that the 11 is. Now, here's the problem with the camera. You could make a full motion picture with it, but who's going to make a full motion picture? Right? I mean, they already did one picture with it. I'm just saying that unless you're completely involved with the makeup of high cinematography for Instagram, may not be as necessary, but it looks pretty good. Here's the Saudis, I think, are coming out and saying, listen, it was not Yemen. We expected that, didn't we?
I don't know what we've anticipated. We've obviously been, or our administration has been saying that they believe it is likely Iran. Yeah. Iran has denied it.
Yeah, attacks not launched from Yemen. Okay. Well, they're launched. Doesn't that just mean the corollary is they were launched from Iran?
Well, the next focus generally for everyone is going to be on what the response will be, right? And to whom it is directed.
And that's us. We're locked and loaded, right?
Well, I mean, the commentary among some on Squawk this morning was that the use of the word terrorist gives us an out where we don't have to have sovereign-on-sovereign warfare. Maybe you see a retaliatory strike on a location outside of Iran. Might take some of the heat off of all of this. We don't know.
I think this is the second time. We didn't do any the first time.
Yeah.
And then I thought the first time, I thought they would do something. If Bolton were here, I think that they definitely would something. I don't know. I mean, I think we have to watch transports. Transports are going to get hurt here.
Well, obviously airlines, clearly.
Yeah.
Boeing also with some incremental bad news out of the regulator of the UAE, saying that they do not see a return to service for the MAX this year, which runs counter to Boeing's guidance. Not to mention the board looking for some structural changes in management within Boeing.
Now, what does that really mean? What kind of shakeup is that?
How does he, when it's all said and done, doesn't Muhlenberg have to?
Muhlenberg. Look, if there's, obviously if the board has issues, but.
I mean, somebody's got to.
What, you think someone has to be someone who just takes the fall? I don't know.
Yes, I do.
Okay, I don't know. I mean.
Don't you?
I don't know.
I mean.
Let's hear what the board says.
It's not an insignificant crisis for this company.
No, I just don't know whether that's the answer.
It may not be.
I mean, I think the answer is they got to get the plane back. They got to get the plane back in the, selling that plane. I mean,
to your point, though, Jim, about oil exposure, I mean, sealed air, highly exposed to petroleum, you could argue, not to mention the Carnivals and the Royal Caribbeans.
And Carnival's about to report, and I was thinking a lot of people, actually there was a note out saying you can buy Carnival ahead because it does yield 4. I don't know, that group has really been bad. I mean, the bookings are bad, the hurricane's bad. It's a tough own. That's a tough own. I don't know if I want to.
Yeah.
Down there.
Speaking of tough owns, guys, WeWork.
How are they doing today?
I think tomorrow they will begin the roadshow at the WeWork company. So, last week we reported it might be as soon as today, but they're giving it another day. But my understanding is, based on a number of conversations, they will start tomorrow with the hope still of potentially pricing this thing fairly quickly. Various news reports, of course. Will SoftBank come in to the IPO and sort of for another billion? And then, of course, there's also the question as to whether the market itself can simply swallow $3 billion worth. Remember, that's what they're raising here. In part, that has been the number because it will then enable them to access $6 billion in debt financing. But there are ways to work with the banks, perhaps, to enable them to get a hold of debt financing if you issue less than that. Because there is question as to how deep the market could be, Jim, for a $3 billion offering.
Well, there are got to be some people who just say, listen, at a certain point, I like the revenue growth here, and I'll make that bet. Or maybe they have something else going that we don't know. I mean, one of the things that I think is really interesting about Uber is that Uber Freight is doing incredibly well. You don't know. I mean, Uber's was saying it's a platform, and Lior Run, who runs the Uber Freight, one of the reasons why freight costs are down dramatically. He predicted me in the early spring, that they, late winter, that they would be down, freight would be down 18% to 20% because of the all these new drivers.
You said that back when we were freaking out about trucking prices.
It's happening. It's happening. So Uber Freight's good. So maybe there's something that we don't know about.
You think at this point, if there was something like that, they'd make sure we know about it.
Oh, you think so? Okay. I mean, Dave, you should give the progression. When was the last round? What was the high?
Well, the high, it was it's kind of an artificial high, but it was $47 billion. That said, it was
high.
Sort of a consolation prize from SoftBank when they did not follow through on their plan to acquire a majority stake. But a lot of other firms that have owned this along the way have had it marked, let's call it in the mid-20s to even as high as $30
billion. Wow. So long,
it's
suckers.
It's looking more like they'd be lucky still if they can get somewhere near 12.
Now, on the podcast, David is actually putting his thumb down.
No, I'm not.
No, you're not? Okay, I just think the podcast is worth
stop
bringing
doing
up.
That.
Unreliable narrator. Down 100, Dow's being led by Dow, Exxon, Chevron. Let's get to Bob Pisani. Bob?
Good morning, guys. Happy Monday. Yes, it's a down day, but it's generally a down day around the world. Just take a brief look. Germany is down. Hong Kong is down. China's closed. Mainland China's closed for a holiday. Japan closed as well. But just want to note here, China's numbers, economic numbers, were not very good. Retail sales, industrial production in China were well below expectations. So China mainland's closed, but you see Hong Kong weak here. Here in the United States, usual suspects. This is an oil play today that's moving things. So naturally, you're going to see some of the airline stocks weaker. Royal Caribbean and the cruise lines are all going to be down. And gold stocks, as you see, like Goldfields, are moving to the upside. Fairly typical. Of course, energy stocks, heavily shorted group. If you look at some of the smaller exploration and production stocks that are U.S.-based, that are Permian, Bakken, Associated, Whiting, Denbury, Range Resources, Laredo Petroleum, particularly some of the smaller names like Laredo, you see here, up double digits here. Drillers are very heavily shorted, have been. It doesn't matter what you're talking about, whether you're talking about an onshore driller, whether you're talking about an offshore driller. It doesn't matter. These are generally associated with offshore drilling, but Diamond, Seadrill, Noble Corp, Transocean, all trading up almost double digits. So other than the oil issue, what are the other issues for the market? There's really two issues this week. Again, X the whole oil question. The first one is, can this cyclical rally continue? Can the big moves up that we've seen in financials and energies and transports and retailers even last week, can that continue? Is this the start of a longer-term cyclical rally? And secondly, for this week, the Fed is going to be cutting. Everyone believes that. But will they provide a rationale to keep cutting? And the debate here is that Mr. Powell doesn't have the votes to keep cutting aggressively, and that may be a little more conservative on future guidance. That may be an issue for the markets down the road here. If you take a look at what's been going on the bottoms-up analysts, the people I watch, on this question on the valuation, it's a big issue. In the last week or so, a few small numbers of analysts have been cutting numbers because the rally has been so noticeable. So today, Buckingham downgraded JP Morgan on a valuation call. Said the stocks run up. It's nice. We still like it. But the prices run up. Wells Fargo downgraded Dick's Sporting Goods today for the same reason. It hit their price target. So we've had all these run-ups, and some of these bottom-up guys are starting to notice and say, you know what? These stocks are getting pricey. That's a problem for the markets. Last week, Loop Capital downgraded Broadcom on the macro concerns. They had their earnings report. They talked about tough environment going forward, or a tougher environment going forward. They said the same thing. Thursday, Wells Fargo, we talked about this. This is the same problem. Downgraded Caterpillar on valuation, the same reason Buckingham downgraded JP Morgan. My point is, yes, it's nice to see these rallies, but unless there is some underlying earnings boost, global valuations getting better, global economic growth getting better, prices going up, eventually, analysts notice and say, is there a reason for the prices to be this high? And some of these cases, as you can see here, that rationale is not there. This could be a major reason for the market. That's why you got to get a resolution of the tariff issue and get a little bit of better news on the economic front, particularly over in Europe and particularly in China, where, as I mentioned, today's economic numbers, not so good. Guys, back to you.
All right, Bob, thanks. Nice recap of some of the downgrades we've seen lately. Let's get to the bond pits as well. It's nice to have Rick Santelli back at the CME. Morning, Rick.
Good morning, Carl. fascinating day. Of course, we're all watching how what occurred in Saudi Arabia is affecting the markets, and indeed it is, but not necessarily in the big ways it used to, and in some ways, completely different. Look at a three-day of two-year note yields. We can clearly see there's a flight to safety going on. But obviously, the big bumps that we had last week, particularly after the ECB meeting, still reign supreme, especially when you consider we got down to, what, 162 on a two-year note yield? It's currently at 176. Look at a 10-year, also three-day, and notice several things. We were down to 166 the day of the ECB meeting, so you can see how it's jumped, but maybe even more to the point that really encapsulates how what happened in August has turned into, in large part, a memory in terms of those dropping rates, and that is we've had eight sessions in a row of 10-year note yields moving higher. Many other maturities are close. This one is probably not going to make nine, but we'll wait and see. Down 5 basis points, the front end of the curve is down 4 basis points. You can see the same dynamic in bond yields, but consider at minus 47, even with a couple of basis point rally, things have dramatically changed as to what is moving fixed income, how much more they can ever give us to the downside. Of course, I spoke last week, there was a good chance that the bottom was in. That was before the ECB meeting. I think it's a much safer bet now. And if you look at 10s minus bonds, they're now at 233 basis points. What's fascinating here is that that is the widest separation between our yields going back to July. So call it, what, 2.5 months? That's a big deal. And once again, I think it demonstrates that at least the perception of what's going on with trade is truly affecting the markets in a way that showcases that things are changing in the economy, even with retail sales as strong as it is, may get stronger should an agreement be reached. Of course, the questions of oil and energy put aside a minute. Normally, you see safe harbor not only things like treasuries, but in Japanese yen. And even though the yen is a bit higher against the dollar, it really has been not the benefit lately of the trade. And finally, 10s minus 2s, now at 9 basis points. This is the steepest in over a month. Jim, David, Carl, back to you.
All right, Rick. See you in a bit. Rick Santelli. Still to come this morning, a hawkish message for Iran from Energy Secretary Rick Perry during a speech in Vienna this morning.
Make no mistake about it. This was a deliberate attack on the global economy and the global energy market.
Secretary Perry is going to join us exclusively in about 10 minutes at the top of the hour. In the meantime, Dow's down 112. The S&P energy sector, long in bear market territory, exits that territory today in the wake of those attacks. We're back in a minute. Nearly all of the top 20 S&P gainers are oil-related. You see Marathon, Apache, Devon, Halliburton. Transports down about 1%. American Airlines down almost 5%. We're back in a moment. Be sure to watch Jim's interview with the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. That's tomorrow on Mad Money at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Time for Jim and Stop Trading.
Well, look, there's a really good piece, Morgan Stanley today, talking about the healthcare implications from the Global Healthcare Conference for Apple. But I really want to point out was that Apple was pretty much enraged on Friday about the call that Goldman made saying, listen, we're not going to cut numbers. We don't have to cut numbers on the subscription. And Josh Lipton broke that story. And I just keep thinking, wow, the Goldman downgrade was very, I mean, number cut was very powerful. But Apple saying no number cut should have been more powerful, but it really didn't happen. Maybe today's the day Apple snaps back.
All right. Jim, what do you got tonight?
I'm going to have to call Paxos on. It's one of these things, people, digital currency. It's actually so funny. It's like Libra from Facebook. And yet it's just kind of quietly doing its thing. I can't wait to hear it because I think a lot of people want an alternative to the U.S. dollar, per se, that's digital, but they want to have it so that there's some transparency. That's blockchain. I'm bringing this guy on because I think a lot of people thought that Libra was a good idea, but Facebook, they didn't trust this guy.
All right.
Thank you.
Big changes.
Speaker tomorrow.
Yes, that's a good one. We'll see you tonight, Jim, 6 p.m. Eastern time. You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.